A small but growing group of people are turning to an idea from our great-grandparents' time. Do-it-yourself home funerals. In this country, for the past century at least, people usually hire someone to take care of their loved ones' bodies after death. A funeral home arranges the embalmment or cremation, transportation for the body, the casket, the wake, the service, and more. A typical funeral in America can cost between $5,000 and $40,000, averaging $6,500, not including cemetery costs. A growing number of people, though, are turning away from that model and choosing to handle some or all of the after-death care themselves, at home. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with those who have made that choice and who help others who are interested. Home after death care is next on Maine Calling. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. At some point, we have to face up to the task of planning a funeral, either for ourselves or for a loved one. That means figuring out everything from ordering a casket to deciding on a funeral home or cemetery. But some people take a different route, having the funeral at their own home and taking matters into their own hands. We'll talk about these do-it-yourself-style funerals with today's panel of guests. Joining me in our studio, Julie Lanois. She's a registered nurse, counselor, hospice bereavement coordinator, and therapeutic respite provider in New Hampshire. Chuck Lakin is a retired college librarian, master woodworker of fine furniture and caskets, and home funeral educator with Maine's Last Things. And Leon Bresloff is vice president of Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, as well as a nurse and a healthcare administrator. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you know anyone who's had a home funeral? Are you interested in doing it yourself? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. And Julie, I'll start with you. What is a home funeral? What do we mean when we say after-death care?
A home funeral is basically when a family decides that they'd like to act as the funeral director for their family member and potentially keep their loved one at home and be cared for in the home after death. That can involve bringing their family member home from another place of death. So for example, if they die in a hospital or a facility where they're not at home already, taking care of them. It means they can take care of the necessary paperwork, including filing a death certificate, which is something they are able to do on their own. It involves potentially a home vigil. Some families like to keep their loved one home for a couple of days to have more time with them. It also can mean potentially a home burial if they decide to be burying their loved one on their own.
When you say bringing the body home from another place, is that something that's easy to do? If your loved one, for example, dies in a hospital, can you say to the hospital, I want to take that body home with me?
You can say that. Some hospitals may have a policy that might not permit you to do that. So if it's something you're thinking about, it's good to check that out ahead of time. But many facilities, hospitals, nursing homes may support that, and you do have a legal right to do that.
Leon, is it easier, both legally and culturally, to undertake a home funeral than it was even a few years ago?
I think it's easier now. I think there are organizations and people who are particularly interested in helping people who wish to do this. In my own experience, there wasn't a lot of help or support at the time that I experienced my own wife's illness and death.
How long ago was that?
That was back in 1975.
In 1975, did you want to do a home funeral then? Did you do one?
My wife wanted to do it, and she, over the years, was ill for a long time. And she, when she was coming close to her death, handed me her memorial service. I didn't know what it was at first, and then I came around and say, what is this? And then we started talking about what she wanted for her own death. So she pretty much organized and developed what she wanted.
Was that comfort for you, or was that, did it feel like a burden?
I was shocked at first, but as we began to talk about it, I felt it was important for me to carry out her wishes.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And that was 1975. You know, I've become aware of the home funeral movement probably in the last 10 years, but this was long before that. Did you get strange reactions from your friends and family?
Well, we did. My family was certainly thinking that we were crazy. And friends, many of the friends understood what Jill was wanting to do. But for the most part, what had happened is she began to talk with people about what she wanted, and they began to listen. And then she began to assign people things that she wanted them to do to be helpful for this home death and funeral and burial.
Wow. Wow. Chuck, I want to bring you into the conversation. How did you get interested in this movement?
It's a direct result of my father's death, which was a very personal thing because he was home for the last 6 weeks of his life, and I was able to be there for most of that. And he was in his own bed with his wife and four kids touching him when he died. It had been a very personal thing up until that point, and I wanted to be a part of whatever happened next. But I had no idea what I could do. So when I finally found out what I could have done, I started talking about it, not trying to convince people that they should do that, but for the people who wanted to have the experience I wanted to have, I would be able to supply the information they needed in order to have that experience.
You say what you wish you would have done. So you did not do a home funeral because you didn't know it was available to you.
Had no idea.
Wow. And you're a furniture maker and you make caskets.
Sure. I mean, if you're a woodworker and you talk about home funerals, of course you make caskets. Well, I call them coffins.
Okay. And what is there a difference in between what those who are putting on a home funeral want? Are your customers all folks who are putting on home funerals, or do you work
Not
with all sorts of people?
No, yeah. All sorts of people.
Yeah.
I don't sell a whole lot of caskets or coffins, but what I have is a personal relationship with everybody who does come to me, which is great conversations and very, it's an honor to be able to do something for these people.
Julie, I know that you have worked in the hospice environment for a long time, and I'm guessing there's sort of a philosophical connection between the hospice movement with its emphasis on dignified end-of-life care and the home funeral movement.
There is, and I think one of the things that's beautiful about it is when people have been caring for their loved one at home, oftentimes very intensively physically and emotionally for a prolonged period, taking care of their loved one after death is just an extension of that. It's just carrying out a little bit further. And there's a lot of healing that can happen in that time after death when we slow down the process and keep people involved in it.
Leon, how much planning does it take?
It takes a lot of planning, at least it did in my case. I'm no expert. I'm talking about what happened with me. And when Jill wanted, or she told me what she wanted, and she expressed it by writing her memorial service, I recognized that I may not be able to do what she's asking me to do. So it took a lot of conversation and a lot of bringing in of friends who would potentially help us do this, that, or another thing. Surprises come up all the time. And for us, it was, where are we going to get a coffin if we don't hire a funeral director? And so our doctor, he volunteered and he built her coffin.
Oh, wow.
And then there was a number of other questions and details that we really didn't know how to work. So we just talked with our friends and various community people. And we did get strange responses. For example, well, we'll bring Jill to the hospital whenever she wants to go to the hospital. And whenever Jill heard that, she said, no, I've had enough of hospitals. I don't want to go to the hospital. I just want to stay home.
You, Leon, talk about your wife having been sick for a long time. And mm-hmm. Chuck, you talk about your father having been home for 6 weeks. Is it still possible to plan a home funeral if the death is sudden and unexpected? Julie, you're nodding, and you're nodding as well. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes. The thing that the Funeral Consumers Alliance and practically everybody else involved in the home funerals is always trying to get people to plan ahead. You know, it's not that you have to be really specific, but you need to have a conversation with your family about what those wishes are, and they need to know what it is and agree with it, because you've heard stories about families torn apart because kids can't agree on what should happen to a parent's body after they die, whatever the situation is. But if you've had that conversation and you know that it's going to happen sometime in the future, obviously. But as it gets closer, you can start making some preparations. And the website for Last Things, which is lastthings.net, or the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, which is fcamaine.net, those are the places, a couple of places you can go to for, they're both information-filled websites. One of Last Things is aimed at just home funerals, and the Funeral Consumers Alliance website is funerals more in general.
And you know what? We'll put both of those on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. We do have to go to a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number for Maine Calling, not for Super Thursday, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, planning a home-based funeral. With me in our studio, Chuck Lakin. He is a retired librarian, master woodworker, and home funeral educator with Maine's Last Things. Leon Breslauf works in healthcare and is vice president of Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine. And Julie Lanoy is a nurse and hospice coordinator in New Hampshire and an advocate for family-directed funerals and informed choice in funeral planning. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before the break, Julie, we were talking about what happens when a death is sudden and we haven't had time. Maybe we would have wanted to do a home funeral, but boy, it seems difficult when you have to make decisions quickly. But you say yes, you can.
Yes. In fact, in my community, there have been multiple families who've decided that they wanted to have some version of a home funeral, including natural burial on their own property. And a couple of those people decided that after the death had even happened. So it can be done. I think the biggest thing is to just know that it's an option and to be able to rally all the friends and community support that you will need to be able to do it together, because it's not a one-person project.
All right, we'll go to the calls now. We'll start with Patrick, who is calling from Owl's Head. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thank you. I think your guest just hit on this when she mentioned natural burials, but my question is about organic or unembalmed burials. It's something I've been interested in, but I didn't know what regulations applied and if that was allowed, and I'm curious if that would be something available through a home funeral or home burial process.
Sure, Patrick. I happen to know there are at least two green cemeteries in Maine, perhaps even more now. And go ahead, Chuck. Tell me.
There's no legal requirement for embalming. Funeral directors may require a body be embalmed if there's going to be a service and a visitation in their funeral homes, but there's no legal requirement for it. And there are, in fact, green cemeteries are ones in which they do not allow bodies, embalmed bodies, to be buried there. And there are two green cemeteries, plus the one in South Orington and one in Lymington, plus the Burr Cemetery in Freeport has set aside a small portion of their grounds for natural burials.
All right. There you go, Patrick. Going to Orland and John. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Yeah, it was really great to hear that South Orington was mentioned, because it's an absolutely beautiful spot. Question that your screener was a little reluctant to let me on about is about deaths with dignity, which really does have a close relationship with hospices, and the current thinking may be changing. It didn't get through Maine several years ago, but I'm just wondering, does the panel think that this is something that they could work with, that might be getting more popular? We're opening our eyes here to different possibilities.
Well, I think the whole reason you all are here is because you have a conference tomorrow and are trying to open up people's eyes to these possibilities.
And he said death with dignity. Is he talking about the patient-directed care of the end of life? If that is true, the bill didn't quite pass last year and will be reintroduced into the state legislature this year.
Okay, John, thanks for your call. Moving to South Berwick and David. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, hi. I'm a Navy vet, and I'd like to have my ashes spread by either the Navy or Coast Guard beyond the 100-fathom curve east of Cape Elizabeth. Is that possible?
Yes. You can contact the Navy or the Veterans Administration, or go to Last Things. We'll give you my phone number, and you can call me, and I can give you further information on that.
All right, David. And again, we're good. It's lastthings.net.
Correct.
And we're going to put that on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, the Maine Calling Facebook page as well, for those of you who aren't listening with a pen in your hand. David, thanks so much for calling. I want to ask you, Leon, because a lot of people may be listening to this program and thinking that in principle they like this idea, but then there also might be just sort of a creepiness factor. What is it like to work with a loved one's dead body? Is it strange, or is it less strange than you might think?
Less strange than what you might think. I mean, I was close to my wife for 15 years, but she was ill for about 9 of those years. But it was up and down. And during those periods of time, we had to decide, what are we going to do with our daughter when my wife dies? And so those discussions really brought us both into looking into the future, and hers was death and mine was going on. So I think we came closer, and actually what I decided to do during that time was to become a registered nurse. I had been an academic, and I really felt I needed to have the skills to take care of her, because that's what she had asked me to do. So I became a registered nurse, which brought me into a very interesting life after she died.
When she died, did you wash her body? Did you have her cremated? What was your choice?
No, her choice was to be buried in the local cemetery in Temple, Maine, where we had some plots. And I personally did not wash her body, but she had a very close friend with my presence who participated and helped dress her. And the question came up, what would she want to wear? And I said, well, she'd put out her jeans and her gardening clothes right over there. That's what she wanted. And so they put her gardening clothes on.
Wow. Julie, you're going to jump in.
I've had this experience in my family also, and have watched now numerous other families go through this question of what will it be like to handle the body of my loved one. And over again, I've seen people walk towards their fear rather than away and be empowered by it and feel incredibly comfortable and afterwards reflect on how natural it was, how it wasn't frightening at all, and how, in fact, how wonderful it was to be able to do that with the intent of it being the last time.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So it's not as overwhelming as it might seem.
No, and the other thing is, death is not an emergency. You can go very slowly. It doesn't have to be, you can pace yourself in terms of this whole process. So there's time for this, for working through your anxiety about it as well.
I'd like to say that also, because it's so personal, it felt right to do all this work with Jill, with her body, with preparing all these things with her friends, because it was our life and our death together. To put her in the hands of someone who we didn't know, like a funeral director, someone who was foreign to us, who might behave properly and look nice, and it just didn't seem right. So it felt better to do it this way for me. And afterwards, I felt as if there was something very treasured about this experience.
You know, Chuck, we were talking during the break that it seems kind of foreign to many people in our country today, but this is how it used to be. If we were living in America 200 years ago and someone died, there would be a wake in the home.
Even less time than that, 100 years ago, and it was still most deaths were handled that way.
And you were talking about the term funeral parlor, where it came from.
Yeah, you know, when people were, for the most part of the population, were rural, and they lived on farms. And the farmhouse all had the formal room, the parlor, where all the celebrations took place, whether it was a wedding, funeral, whatever it happened to be. But then when people started moving into cities to go to work in factories, they were living in apartments. They didn't have that. And so sort of the start of the funeral directors, the funeral industry, was that they created a place where you could rent a parlor. So it was a funeral parlor. And it was what they were called at first. And so then, of course, once they had that space, they would just, of course, naturally just started offering all the other services. And so they just grew into the funeral industry, grew right out of that.
It's so interesting. We do have to go to another break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, reasons for having a funeral at home. Joining me today, Leon Bresloff, Vice President of Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, Julie Lanois, Nurse and Hospice Bereavement Coordinator, Home Funeral Advocate, and Chuck Lakin, Master Woodworker and Home Funeral Educator. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Veronica calling from East Blue Hill. Hi, Veronica.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. I'm calling with, actually, because I want to draw attention to an interesting alternative to funerals. A couple of years ago, when my husband received a terminal diagnosis, we planned ahead that he would donate his body to a body donor program for ongoing research, for training future doctors, basically. University of New England, the College of Osteopathic Medicine, accepted our application. There's a bit of paperwork involved, but it's not difficult. This all happened. He died at home, and it was plenty of time to get organized. And I was extraordinarily impressed with how beautifully it was handled. Within a few hours of his passing, they came to collect him and take him down to, I guess it was Biddeford. I was not involved in having to do anything at all except to sit by. And the other thing, although this altruistic gesture made by my scientifically minded husband, the bonus was that it cost us absolutely nothing. Because the college has its own funeral director, licensed funeral director, they were able to handle that without any expense at all. The deal is that he will stay there for 1 to 4 years. And then at the end, I will either be able to have the ashes sent to me, or they have a multi-denominational annual program where everyone gets together who wishes to do the final farewell. And the ashes, I believe, are disposed of collectively at the university. And I feel a lot of people don't know that it's a possibility. And if you are a Maine State resident, then the University of New England can be very helpful.
Veronica, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. And you all are all nodding. You know about this program. A lot of people will say, sort of generally and vaguely, I'd like to donate my body to science, but this is a place one can turn.
On the Last Things website, on the funeral options page down toward the bottom, it says body donation and has the contact information for the University of New England and Tufts University in Boston will also accept bodies from Maine, and they have the contact information for them too.
I think there's a caveat to that in that they may not need a body at the time that the person dies, so it's good to have a plan B.
And to plan ahead.
All right, Veronica, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Sacco and Roger. Hi, Roger. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
Good. Been listening to you for a long time, and I'm just glad I got the call in. Experience that my wife and I had 3 years ago, our grandson was killed in a car accident in Windham, and we received the news at church Sunday morning 3 years ago. We were told his body was being taken to Maine Medical. Of course, we rushed up there as fast as we could, and by the time we got there, he had passed, and they still had tubes in him and things. And my wife at the time saw him, and he was pretty messy. And she asked if we could wash him. And they were very obliging, and it was an experience that was good for myself, but it really helped my wife out. And in life, we hugged and kissed, and we told each other we loved each other, and why wouldn't that continue after death? It's still the same person. There is some sort of a little something that's added to a dead body that seems to be a little mysterious, or we stand away a little, but it's the same person that we loved a few moments ago that was alive. So for us, it was very emotionally rewarding. It was settling. And to wash him as we did when he was a child was something that made a huge difference in our ability to deal with his passing.
Roger, thank you for your call. And I'm so sorry for your loss. Julie, it is interesting that the hospital was fine.
Yes, and most people in the field recognize the value of that. Well, I think what Roger's speaking to is what most people who go through a similar experience also share. And what happens with taking that time with the body of our loved one is it helps to mobilize our grief in a different way than when we have a more passive role. And so the tasks of grieving that we go through, it helps us to really, if you think about the first task of grief, is really to accept that this person is really dead. And when you're touching their body and you feel that temperature change and you're present to that, there's something beyond what's happening in your frontal lobe of intellectually understanding it, but really, really getting it that this has happened. It helps also to mobilize our feelings of grief and give us some action steps to do. It's a very healthy way of grieving.
Roger, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Westbrook and Joanne. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting topic and something that I feel predisposed towards. But I have a question, like, what is the time frame for burial if you're not embalmed? I mean, the body decomposes pretty quickly, right? And it's a health and safety factor of not having dead bodies floating around.
I can tell you my own personal experience. Jill had happened to die in April. We were in a rural area, and we put her body in our summer kitchen, which we never heated. So it was able to keep cool, and we didn't need any ice. But people can always get ice to keep the body cool if there is time needed to have the family gather.
It's very easy to keep a body cool, and even a room at less than 70 degrees with an air conditioner if you need to if it's summer can work just fine. There's certain kinds of ice that you can use that can help keep the body cool. I've been with families who've kept their loved one for 4, 5, 6 days before burial, and that's perfectly okay.
All right. Thanks for your question, Joanne. And I think that's what a lot of people have is real practical questions. Another real practical question might be, how much paperwork is there? You know, when somebody goes to a funeral director, the funeral director just handles the paperwork and you don't even know.
That's on the Last Things website. There's one of the pages is called The Dreaded Paperwork, which explains how to do the paperwork. And we named it that because the first person we talked to in Maine who tried to do a home funeral said it was the worst part of the process. It took her 2 days to get the paperwork done because she didn't know what she was doing and the people she was talking to didn't know how to help her. But it's a pretty straightforward process. And when my father-in-law died, because I knew what I was doing and I had gone to the three people I needed to see after the death, before the death, it took me an hour and 20 minutes to do the paperwork. So it's straightforward. There are only three pieces of paper. It's explained on the Last Things website, Dreaded Paperwork page, and people can call me up and I'll be pleased to walk them through the process.
If you have a question for our panel, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, our email address talk@mainepublic.org. We have an email from Liam. There's a great resource video, A Family Undertaking. I've shown this in several college courses, and the students were very engaged. A Family Undertaking, I understand, is an old frontline program.
Yes, it's a great film that there's a little bit of outdated information in it now, but it's a terrific resource, and it does walk you through three different families' experiences with different versions of home funerals. And I think it's a great introduction to what's possible and to help yourself think creatively about what you might want to do.
And they had the film crew had access to the family for several months before the death. So you see the person who was dying in the kitchen talking to his sons, and you see him making the coffin and him branding. He was a rancher in Montana, I think, and you see him branding his own coffin with
wow.
his brand.
Wow.
So it's a good show.
There was a film that was made of myself and my family before Jill died called Planting Things I'll Not See Flower. And it was made by United Methodist Communications. Whether or not it's still available, I don't know. But I have a copy of it, and it's a very good film.
Well, let us know. And if there is a way to see it online, will you let us know so we can put it on our Facebook page?
Okay.
There are lots of more current films also available. I believe that the resource page on the website Last Things also lists many of those.
Okay, terrific. Again, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our last break of the hour. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Home Funerals. With me in the studio, Leon Breslov, who's Vice President of Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, Chuck Lakin, who's a woodworker and home funeral educator, and Julie Lanoy, a nurse and home funeral advocate. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Tess, who's calling from Rockland. Hi, Tess. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm 25 and one of three daughters, the youngest in my family, and I was just wondering about how you begin this conversation with parents or with loved ones and how you broker that conversation tactfully and meaningfully without sort of lots of emotions bubbling up and just how you begin that, if you could speak to that.
So one good way would be to say, I heard this radio show today and it made me think about this subject, and I wondered if you've heard about it and if you know anything about it, because oftentimes people don't know it's an option, and that can really start a conversation that you weren't expecting. That's what I did in my family. It for me happened with a little article I saw, and none of us knew it was an option, and that's how we got going on it.
And also on the Last Things website, again on the Planning Ahead page, down where there are links to three national organizations whose purpose it is to help people, help families have that conversation. And they all have different, slightly different approaches. And so somewhere there you're going to get a good idea about how to make that happen. And it's a gift to your survivors to have done that planning ahead and had that conversation.
Good question, Tess. We're going to move to Lincolnville and Greta. Hi, Greta. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this program. It's so important for the public to know. I began listening to the program part with you, so perhaps you've already spoken to these two.
Greta, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Do you have are you on a speakerphone or do you have a poor cell connection?
I am not on a speakerphone. So my two questions, can you hear me now?
Go ahead, give it a try.
Okay. Comparing the financial cost of a home funeral to the traditional funeral industry funeral, and also the environmental consequences of the use of fossil fuel for cremation and embalming.
Sure.
So right now the average funeral in the United States, a full-service funeral from a funeral director, costs about $7,500 when you include cemetery costs. After that, you're in the $11,000 to $12,000 range. A home funeral could be, you would save that $7,500, but you would, if you were being buried in a conventional cemetery, you would still have that cemetery costs. The options are a green cemetery is one where bodies may not be embalmed. They don't allow the use of vaults. Whatever you're buried in is biodegradable. And there are, in the green cemeteries in Maine, they charge $800 for a plot and less than $500 to open and close the grave. So you're talking $1,500 instead of $3,500 plus. So a home funeral and burial in a green cemetery could be in the $800 range. And if you've created a family burying ground, a straightforward process, you can be buried on your own land. So a home funeral and burial on your own land, your cost is functionally zero.
All right. Well, Greta, good question. Thank you so much. Leanne, I want to return to your story a little bit and ask you if there were any surprises for you as you, even though your wife planned everything so well.
Right. I would believe that there are always going to be surprises in events like this. And one of the interesting surprises for me was our doctor made the casket. But what he made was just a plain wooden box. And what we realized when we started putting Jill into the coffin is that her body was not stable. It would move around. And when we went to the cemetery to bury her, there would be all these noises of a body moving around. So we asked ourselves, what can we do? And at first I got very angry. I said, Jill, where did you put the rags? I need something to put under you. And I didn't know where she put them. And then we looked up in the haymow, and there were several bales of hay. And we broke open a bale of hay, and it was just perfect to put under her, and it smelled beautiful, and she looked so peaceful sitting in that hay.
Mm. Julie, you wanted to make the point that it's not all or nothing.
Yes, if there are elements of a home funeral that sound like they might be right for you, but other parts that you don't think you want to do, this is not an all or nothing. You can employ the professionals who are there to do parts of it that you might not want to. For example, you might decide you want to do everything but not the paperwork. You could hire a funeral director to do that. You could hire a funeral director to do the transportation if that's an issue. And there are funeral directors who are very supportive of home funerals and home funeral families and willing to work with them. So you might decide, I just want to have a home vigil. I want to do that part, and I want to keep my mom home for 3 days. And you can do that and not have a burial in the backyard.
And Chuck, we're almost out of time, but the whole reason we're doing this program today is because tomorrow...
Saturday, Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine is having their annual meeting. The topic of the program will be home funerals. Julie will be doing the keynote address, and I've heard of an earlier version of this, and it's terrific.
And where's the meeting?
At Pejepscot Terrace in Brunswick.
At 9 o'clock.
Starts at the program starts at 9:30.
Okay, terrific.
And we're going to build coffins. We're going to do after death body care. It's going to be quite a day.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. Julie Lanois, a registered nurse, counselor, hospice bereavement coordinator, and therapeutic respite provider in New Hampshire. Chuck Lakin, a retired college librarian, master woodworker of furniture and coffins and home funeral educator, and Leon Breslev, Vice President of Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, as well as a nurse and healthcare administrator. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. We had additional help from John Keimel. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, a conversation about collective memory. We'll discuss the cultural memories we all share. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.